It is Monday, May the 21st. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, U.S.-China trade war on hold, and what about tariffs?
Tariffs themselves, if it's part of a comprehensive strategy, that does things really different than they have been done forever.
Trump tweet on possible FBI infiltration of his presidential campaign.
The FBI responded very quickly and said, if this were motivated by politics, the American people need to know it.
Also ahead, a chat with Solomon Islands singing sensation Rosie DeLma. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. The United States and China are pulling back from the brink of a trade war after they reported progress in talks. Those talks aimed at bringing down America's massive trade deficit with Beijing. U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin appeared on the program Fox News Sunday.
We have agreed to put the tariffs on hold while we try to execute the framework. The president has been very clear since the first meeting with President Xi in Mar-a-Lago that we are going to reduce the trade deficit.
After high-level talks last week here in Washington, Beijing agreed in a joint statement with the U.S. to substantially reduce America's trade deficit with China, but did not commit to cut the gap by any specific amount. Trump administration had sought to slash the deficit by $200 billion. VOA's Victor Beatty asked Grant Newsham, a senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, that's in Tokyo, what he makes of all of this.
I don't make much of it. This is apparently a belief on certain parts of the administration that it's possible to solve some very deep-seated problems with the Chinese approach to international trade. Over just a series of negotiations, and it's not simply a matter of the Chinese agreeing to buy $100 billion, $200 billion of anything. This does not address, say, the problems for American companies in China, the forced technology theft, just intellectual property violations right and left, and the simple inability to enforce a contract. So this is really, as I say, it represents the thinking part of the administration, that if you just get in the room with people, you can solve all your problems, almost as if you're dealing with Canadians instead of Chinese.
Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross is going to go to Beijing to flesh out the details. What is the success of that? We know the Chinese are very tough negotiators.
Oh, I think the Chinese are going to do very well. Already they have, apparently. Stringing the Americans along, making some initial concessions, which may benefit a few American companies, a few industries, but once again, do not go to the fundamental problems with the Chinese economy, where it's a rigged casino. And that is something that requires just a fundamental transformation of Chinese economy, society, indeed psychology. And that is not to be done in an afternoon or in a weekend by some U.S. negotiators. The Americans had a good hand to play, and they played it pretty well after with the ZTE sanctions. And apparently decided they don't like winning, so have going to go negotiate. But I think the Chinese must be laughing behind their backs.
Speaking of ZTE, Larry Kudlow suggested that if any of the remedies are altered, they'll still be going very, very tough, including big fines, compliance measures, new management, new boards. Don't expect ZTE to get off scot-free. It ain't going to happen.
Oh, I think the Chinese still must be laughing. So he can say that. But once again, they have after only about a week, they have actually backed off. And this promise that, they're not going to ease up on ZTE, they're going to hold that over the Chinese heads. Now, that almost reminds you of a parent saying, well, this time I mean it, you'd better stop misbehaving. This time I mean it. I just don't think the Chinese take it seriously. After all that ZTE has done, after the fierce and very strong sanctions the Americans put on it a week later, really for nothing more than a promise to talk more and maybe buy some American soybeans and sorghum and maybe some liquid natural gas or oil. Well, that's all but to get the Americans to talk again. And if that's your objective, is to just keep talking, well, that's an American approach. It's best to operate from a position of real strength and really be just unwilling to concede on what you, on your position. And unfortunately, that half of the American administration that thinks that you can talk this out in a weekend with the Chinese, they seem to have the upper hand, and that's not a good thing. You know, of course, for all commentators like me, you know, we're sort of watching from the gallery, and there may be more going on that we don't know about, where this is a very clever chess game that's being played by the administration, but I doubt it.
President Trump has indicated he will return to tariffs if no breakthrough is achieved. Do you think that will be effective?
Well, tariffs by themselves. That just gets into a tit for tat sort of back and forth. It does not apply enough pressure on the Chinese, and really, it's that part of the Chinese Communist Party's leadership that causes them to feel that they are personally being harmed or threatened. That the tariffs are not going to do that. There's no limit to the amount of pressure or even discomfort the Chinese can absorb. But when leadership personally has to absorb it, that's a very different thing. And so tariffs themselves, if it's part of a comprehensive strategy, long-term strategy, that does things really different than they have been done forever, that I'm not impressed with tariffs themselves.
Grant Newsham is a senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies in Tokyo. He was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. Well, the next U.S. presidential election is more than 2 years away, but that has not stopped President Trump nor a large group of potential Democratic candidates from contemplating that 2020 race. National correspondent Jim Malone has more from the VOA Washington News Center.
President Trump on the road in Indiana, offering a preview of his re-election campaign theme.
Our new slogan for 2020, you know what it is?
Keep America great.
But the president is clearly concerned about this year's congressional midterm elections, where opposition Democrats are favored to make gains.
And all of the great momentum that we're having as a country on jobs, on safety, on security, on our military, it's all at stake in November.
Several potential Democratic presidential contenders spoke about the party's future at a recent conference in Washington, including Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Warren said Democrats face an uphill climb this year in winning back control of the House and possibly the Senate.
We can't climb that hill by ignoring the millions of Americans who are angry and scared about the damage this president and this Republican Party have done to our democracy. We can't ignore it, and we shouldn't want to ignore it.
Another potential contender, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, predicted Democrats will benefit this year from energized women voters.
And the reason we will take back the House and hopefully the Senate is because we have great women candidates all across this country running in record numbers. And there is a powerful wave of women activists who are going to get it done.
And I just believe we can do both. And the way.
But another Democrat who could figure in the 2020 race, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, said voters want more than anti-Trump rhetoric.
They don't like how he beats up on innocent people, and they are going to stand up against that. But we're not going to see it if we spend our whole time bemoaning the fact that he's there. He's there. and we have to present an alternative.
Like most presidents before him, Trump should expect Republican losses in this year's midterms, says analyst John Fortier.
He has his base with him, but the other side is really motivated to come out. And all of these special elections we've seen Democrats are really motivated to vote against him. I think his base will be with him, but the enthusiasm is really on the other side.
But Democrats have their challenges as well, including uniting the factions that backed Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders in 2016, says expert David Abraham.
The Democratic Party has not had much to offer in the last 2 years, and the established Democratic Party is still consumed with preventing its own left wing from dominating the party.
It may seem early, but President Trump and a slew of Democrats who would like to succeed him already have their gaze fixed on the 2020 election. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
President Trump has tweeted he will order an investigation into claims a Federal Bureau of Investigation informant infiltrated his 2016 election campaign back when Barack Obama was U.S. president. Within minutes of the president's tweets, members of the Obama administration and others reacted with alarm. They believe the Trump threat is potentially the most serious intervention into the U.S. judicial system since Mr. Trump fired the director of the FBI, James Comey, when he was investigating the Trump campaign for possible collusion with Russia and its alleged interference in the 2016 election. VOA's Lori London got reaction on all of this from criminal defense attorney and former Central Intelligence Agency officer Jack Rice.
Well, there's a lot to unpack here. I think the first thing we have to say is this. If there was an investigation for political reasons, that would be a very severe problem. In fact, the FBI responded very quickly and said, if this were motivated by politics, the American people need to know it. And it's true. They do need to know it. But the real question is, was it political or was it potentially criminal? A big part of this is the investigation that the FBI has done. And frankly, if we look at where we have gone over the last year and a half, 2 years, what we've now seen is we have 17 indictments. We now have five who have actually been convicted. And so to argue that this is fake news, to argue that this is simply a witch hunt, ignores all of that and a lot more.
But what do you say about the president's tweeting, I hereby demand and will do so officially, that the Department of Justice look into whether or not the FBI Department of Justice infiltrated or surveilled the Trump campaign for political purposes? Can a president order a Justice Department to, do his bidding?
The answer is no, not exactly. The thing is this organization is doing a criminal investigation that may involve this president. The idea that he can somehow assume that because he is president, he gets to dictate everything that's going on inside the Beltway simply is false.
But do you think that the president in some ways could be just winning by making this a political argument as Robert Mueller continues to stay silent?
Well, I think that's exactly what he's intending to do. If we look at where we are right now, he continues to drive the media. The media continue to bite on the story. And the real problem that's going on is there is an ongoing investigation. My fear, and I think the fear of a lot of people who are following this, is that in the event that Bob Mueller actually determines that wrongdoing was done, and it clearly has been proven already among some, but that this could go all the way to the White House, that he's driving some of his supporters to say, I don't care. They need to care. This isn't about this president, the next president, the last president. This is about where we go in the future as a country.
Well, the president also tweeting that this witch hunt of an investigation, because they have not found any evidence of colluding with Russia, that they're now looking at the rest of the world. That, of course, following a New York Times report that Trump Jr. and other aides met with a Gulf emissary offering to help the campaign win an election. He's saying, oh, now they're just looking elsewhere because they can't find any problems with Russia.
Well, let's be clear. This president said that there is no proof of collusion. That is not true. What we have determined at this point is that there have been, again, 17 indictments, 5 convictions, and the investigation continues to spin. We also have more information today than we did several months ago as to a first meeting with Donald Trump Jr. and Russian involvement there. Now we're aware of a second meeting with Donald Trump Jr., somebody from UAE, another from Saudi Arabia, another having connections to the Israelis, and a Republican donor. All of those are legitimate and important and potentially lead to, yes, the question is collusion. So to say that this is a witch hunt, frankly, makes no sense. One last point, if I might. His argument that he was trying to demand that Justice Department release the name of this confidential informant. When there are criminal investigations, prosecutors and the police and law enforcement in general regularly use confidential informants. And to burn informants because somebody, including a sitting president, simply demands it, has the potential of not just blowing that one defendant or that one source. It could potentially blow the ability of the Bureau or any law enforcement organization to actually acquire more sources. This is far bigger than just this investigation. It's about all the investigations and the integrity of the FBI.
That's Jack Rice. He is a criminal defense attorney and a former Central Intelligence Agency officer. He was speaking with my colleague, Lori London. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Some people who want to lose weight quickly may engage in periods of short-term fasting. While taking breaks from food might help with initial weight loss, doctors say it could also cause various health problems and, ironically, cause your body to burn calories more slowly than if you were eating a normal diet. A new study suggests fasting every other day also increases the risk of developing diabetes. Brazilian researchers who worked with lab rats found that fasting can weaken the action of insulin, a hormone that helps regulate our body's sugar levels. Previously conducted research also indicates that such fasting can produce free radical molecules, which are said to cause damage to the body at a cellular level and may be connected with cancer risk, impaired organ function, and faster aging. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. And now it's time for our music segment, and today a rare opportunity to speak with an up-and-coming singer-songwriter.
Hey, yeah, still by me through my downfall. Fixed my heart when it's broken. Oh, you're so proud when I'm winning.
What a great privilege and honor we have today to speak with Solomon Islands singing sensation Rosie Delma. Rosie, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
You know, I have to say, we've just been listening to Mama, I Love You, your newest song. It is spectacular, so touching. Tell us about how you came up with that song.
Well, I was really inspired by my mom and other moms because we've been through a lot, and it made me do things and think of the lyrics, and that's how I became to write the song and was inspired by it, and I wrote that song.
It's a spectacular song. I hope we hear more original songs from you because you've got a real talent for writing music.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm working on a few singles. It's going to be released soon, so I hope you guys like it.
Well, I'm sure we will. Now, if we would like to, our listeners would like to get Mama, I Love You, I know it's available on iTunes, Amazon, and all those. All they have to do is just go there and put in your name and the name of the song, and they can download it?
I think that's how it goes.
You know, Rosie, I have to say, I've seen a number of your videos that are online, and they are, to begin with, spectacular. You have an amazing voice, a unique voice, I think. I did a radio feature, as you know, recently on you, and many people heard it, and I heard from every one of them, and they all said that they were in awe over your voice and the passion with which you sing. And I've read comments on social media that people have written every time you post something or they've seen your video. It must be wonderful to know that you're touching that many lives all over the world.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's an honor for me to for people to listen to my songs and like it. It really means a lot to me.
You know, the first video I saw is, I'm sure, what a lot of people have seen of you and Conqueror singing Adele's Hello. obviously a wonderful display of your voice. I know you've done a number of covers. Of course, there's When We Were Young and Tessan Chen's song, Back to Love, Back to My Love, I think it is. Anyway, they're amazing songs. Just who have been your inspirations as you've come along with the great talent you have?
Mainly it's my family, because they've helped me a lot since little girl. They believed in me and they inspired me to start off my career in music, because I love singing, and I think it's Adele and some of other singers like Celine Dion. And
I noticed that you posted that on iTunes that Hello is there in the top 100 chart, as it well should be, no doubt. Do you plan to do any more with Conqueror?
Oh, yeah, we're working on that. I think Conqueror, we're going to do another single, but not sure yet, but we're still working on that.
I know you're very famous in the Solomon Islands and elsewhere around the South Pacific. Do you plan on branching out from there? Could we ever see you here in the United States or touring elsewhere?
For the Pacific, yes. And I really want to come to the United States, but here in the Solomon Island, as you know, it's a third world country, so it's really slow. So I need to work hard on it, and hopefully I will see the States sometime in the future.
Well, I mean, with 83 million plus viewers of Hello on YouTube, and many, many more for all the other songs you've done, I'm sure somewhere there is somebody saying, we've got to bring Rosie to the United States, and I'm sure that's going to happen. Rosie, you're a remarkable young lady. We're really impressed with your songs, looking forward to what comes next. And just thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thank you for having me also. It's really an honor for me to have this conversation with you.
Great, great, great. And now I think we're going to hear the entire song, Mama, I Love You.
Hey, oh, yeah, stood by me through my downfalls. You hold me close when I'm hurting. Fixed my heart when it's broken. Oh, you're so proud when I'm winning, but you won't let it. So it's adorn how you today because of you.
Again, that was Rosie Delma's latest hit, Mama, I Love You. The song is available on all the download sites. All you have to do is log in and look for Mama, I Love You under Rosie's name. By the way, it's Rosie Delma. That's R-O-S-I-E-D-E-L-M-A-H. Rosie's also active on all the social media sites, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Well, the world should look out. This Solomon Island singing sensation is making all kinds of great music, and you should check her out on YouTube. I think you'll love what you find there. One other story for you. Kelly Clarkson tearfully called for a moment of change instead of a moment for silence for the victims of the shooting, the school shooting in the U.S. community of Santa Fe, Texas. That happened Friday. All of this at the opening of the Billboard Music Awards late Sunday in Las Vegas. The award show host, that's Kelly Clarkson, who is also from Texas, said she held back tears and that moments of silence simply aren't working. But she said, why don't we change what's happening? Very nice, Kelly. Hey, listen, thanks everyone for joining us here on the Voice of America's International Edition. Always good to have you here. The latest world news is straight ahead, and we hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, John Ellison, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We're hoping you have a super Monday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Oil-rich Venezuela has for decades been one of Latin America's most affluent countries. In those days, when Venezuela experienced manpower shortages, thousands of people would cross the border from neighboring Colombia to find work. These days, the shoe is on the other foot. Thanks in large part to mismanagement by the government of President Nicolas Maduro, Venezuela is in an economic and political crisis. There is no food, no medicine, no jobs, and no end in sight. So Venezuelans are fleeing the country in droves. Most are going to Colombia. Every day, about 35,000 people cross the Simon Bolivar International Bridge and head for the closest large city, Cucuta, just a few kilometers to the north. About half of them purchase food and medicine there, visit family or conduct business, and return home. Some keep moving, heading to Chile, Argentina, or Peru. But every day about 5,000 stay in Cucuta, and when they arrive, nearly all are in need of food and medical attention. This exodus of Venezuelans desperate to leave the poverty and repression in their native country has been going on for 2 years now. The people and government of Cucuta are doing what they can, but they are overwhelmed and underfunded. So Colombia's president has appealed to the international community for help, and the United States is responding. On May 8th, the U.S. government announced an additional $18.5 million in bilateral funding to support the displaced Venezuelans in Colombia. Subject to a congressional approval, this funding will go towards school feeding programs for children in communities most impacted by the influx, mobile health services to provide vital health care for underserved populations, and registry and border data collection systems to help the government of Colombia make informed and timely decisions regarding Venezuelans seeking assistance. This new funding complements the more than $21 million in humanitarian assistance the United States has provided since 2017 for Venezuelans who have fled their country and for the neighboring countries hosting them. We urge the friends and neighbors of Venezuela and Colombia, as well as the global community, to follow our example.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.